Support for Impact Cincinnati comes from Murray and Robin Sinclair.
Good morning. This is Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. The number of people with type 2 diabetes has been increasing consistently. This morning, we're going to talk about diabetes, what causes it, and what you can do to try to prevent it. Joining me are endocrinologist and associate professor at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine, Department of Internal Medicine, Dr. Marzi Salehi, American Diabetes Association Associate Director of Mission Delivery for Cincinnati, Aaron Crosby, and Director of the Cincinnati Diabetes and Obesity Center, and Professor at UC College of Medicine, Department of Internal Medicine, Dr. Randy Seeley. You can join in the conversation, email your questions to impact@wvxu.org, or post them on our Facebook page. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us.
Certainly glad to have you here today. I'd like to start out defining the difference between type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes, just sort of to establish what the two diseases are. Who'd like to start?
So I'll go with
Salehi.
That. Yeah. So diabetes is a condition, a group of conditions which with high blood glucose levels. Type 1 diabetes, which actually used to be called diabetes at youth or insulin-dependent diabetes. This is actually a diabetes which is created, is resulted from destruction of pancreatic beta cells. These are the source of insulin production in the body. And in majority of cases, this is being done by the body immune system action on pancreas. So there are actually the autoimmune system which is acting against pancreas and is destroying the beta cells. Therefore, these patients, they really do not produce insulin enough, and they really need to take insulin, and that's actually how they are actually just controlling their glucose levels. On the other hand, type 2 diabetes, which used to be called diabetes of adult onset diabetes or a non-insulin dependent, again, this is a misnomer, we know that for sure. This is a diabetes which has high blood sugar due to a variety of different insulin defect, insulin action defect, and as well as insulin secretion defect. But the core component of this disease is insulin resistant, meaning that the body cannot take up the sugar. And because of that, the main actually part of the management for these patients is creating insulin sensitivity or improving their insulin resistance. Obesity is a huge risk factor for type 2 diabetes. And because the rising obesity in recent years, we are seeing actually the rising incidence of type 2 diabetes as well.
So when we talk about this, then, as you go through it, the biggest increase then is in type 2. You're seeing a greater increase there.
Both types, actually, they have been increasing over last decades. But type 2 is double, actually, over the last 30 years. So hugely, hugely is being increasing in parallel with increase in obesity.
Yeah, again, the numbers are increasing for both, but there are more type 2 diabetics than there are type 1 diabetics.
Well, we've heard a lot about why type 2 is increasing with obesity and sugary soft drinks, and we'll get into all of that. Why is type 1 perhaps increasing?
We really don't know what's the reason for that rise. There are so many speculation and so many studies ongoing. So not much actually we can say about rising type 1 diabetes, but clearly type 2 we have a culprit, which is obesity.
For type 1, it's been interesting because there is a lot of theories about why type 1 diabetes is increasing. The data to be able to say that any one of those theories is correct, changes in what moms eat, changes in the environment, food supply, other kinds of things that might create more autoimmune responses are all hypothesized. But again, trying to get to real evidence about what really is causing that increase has been hard to come by.
So you mentioned that obesity is the greatest cause for type 2. It's not the only cause.
It's not. Again, type 2 diabetes, we know that at the time that the patient is being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, they do have problem with beta cells. We know that the majority of a great part of the pancreas is dead, it's dysfunctional. So there is actually a combination of genetic factors as well as environmental factors. So one of the environmental factors that we mentioned was obesity, but there are other actually factors, including genetic factors, which they play a role in type 2 diabetes.
Yeah, this is a really important point. It's one of the hardest things about talking about diabetes is the view that diabetes is a function of things that people are entirely in their own control of, right? That somehow that if they could simply eat less, that they wouldn't have type 2 diabetes. And the reality is that's just not true. And I'll give you a simple example, right? So if you're from East Indian descent, right, you are much more likely to have diabetes and still be lean than if you are from Caucasian descent. So again, that points to the enormous genetic component to whether you're going to get type 2 diabetes or not, that is independent of just your weight. So again, across the range of spectrum of weight, you'll find people with type 2 diabetes. It's no doubt that you're more likely to have type 2 diabetes if you're heavier than if you're leaner. But the stigma that goes with that has been a real barrier for us to both treat the disease, to get people to acknowledge the disease and get people to actually test themselves and find out whether they have it. All those things, the stigma that goes with it has made it much harder to deal with.
What are the barriers and what are some of the things you need to be looking for? What should people in general be looking for when it comes to concern about diabetes?
Unfortunately for diabetes and having high glucose levels, there's not much symptoms associated with that until the levels are really too high. When they start, actually, people, they start feeling it by having dehydration, having symptoms like frequency urination or feeling thirsty all the time. But that is generally actually with blood glucose levels over 300 or 400. So there is a long period of having diabetes and not having any symptoms. Therefore, it's extremely important, as Randy was mentioning, that people who have high risk factors, they should get a screen for having diabetes or not and being actually detected earlier than later. So the barrier is, I think, is a public awareness about actually what risk factors are. And again, obesity is one risk factor. He just mentioned about belonging to ethnicity, a specific ethnicity group, such as African American. This is a huge risk factor for having diabetes. The same goes with Latino, Asian Americans. And as well as having any glucose abnormalities. For example, if you are tested for fasting glucose and that fasting glucose has not been normal, you are more at risk of having diabetes than someone whose fasting glucose has been always normal. If during pregnancy you had any problem with glucose metabolism, you are more at risk for this. If you have any sign of metabolic syndrome, which is high blood pressure, high cholesterol, you are at more risk of having diabetes. So if you are at higher risk and if you are obese, you have to be checked for having diabetes or not.
How often?
So this is actually, there are algorithms based on American Diabetic Association. For example, over age 45, we intend actually to just check the glucose metabolism once. And if that actually just is normal, we do it in 3 years. But for high-risk patients, we do it yearly, and we do it as early as we know about their risk factors. So that is extremely important. If you are 20 years old and you have a risk factor, you have to be tested for that. One other group of patients that I have to put a stress on is women with polycystic ovary syndrome. This is actually a very common, actually, endocrinology disorders in reproductive age women.
What is that?
This is actually a problem with menstrual periods. Women actually in reproductive age, they don't have normal ovulation, and because of that, they seek help from gynecologists because they don't have regular periods. They do have the cyclicity, the period actually cycles per 6 months, so they are late in terms of their periods. They do have a huge association with metabolic abnormalities. These women, they are at risk of having diabetes by 10 times than background population. So if you do have any of these high risk factors, you have to be screened for glucose metabolism.
Can I emphasize, just when you think about the Cincinnati area in itself, right? We estimate that there are more than 240,000 individuals in the greater Cincinnati area who have diabetes. Between 50 and 60,000 of them don't know they have diabetes, right? So we have 50 or 60,000 people walking around with the time bomb of diabetes, not knowing that they're at risk and not knowing that we can do something to help them today that would make their lives much healthier down the road. And that's the real shame of all of this, is that we haven't been able to take the people that we know have the disease and treat them better than we do today, and to make sure the people who have the disease but don't know it get the help that they can, that will make it so that they're going to be healthier for a much longer period of time.
But then there are the folks who believe ignorance is bliss. And if they just don't get tested and don't find out that they have it, then they can go on and live their lives and do what they're doing. Do you find that a lot, Erin?
Well, yeah, I do. I think that there are a lot of people who we speak with through the American Diabetes Association that just say, oh, you know, I don't have that. I no one in my family has that. Well, ignorance is bliss, but it can really come back to, you know, bite you later on in life with the repercussions of diabetes. And I think too, if you are just curious, there's no blood test involved. You want to go to the American Diabetes Association's website to take that risk assessment. You can do so. Just head over to diabetes.org and click on the risk test, and you can at least see how you fall in that algorithm and see if you're at risk. And it bases it on all the different factors that the doctors spoke about. And then, you know, if you are at risk, take that information to your doctor and ask for a blood test and see where you fall. I think it's really important to, yes, ignorance is bliss, but it can really, you know, hurt you in the long run.
Just to be clear, right? So there are lots of straightforward things that your physician can help you do to help you control your blood sugar if it's off, right? Not all of them involve needles. Right. Not all of them involve invasive procedures, but everything that you do early to control your blood glucose levels helps you later on. Right. Makes you avoid things like amputations. Right. Diabetes is still one of the leading reasons for amputations. We are still taking off people's legs as a function of diabetes. Blindness. Right. Kidney dysfunction that results in dialysis. Right. So if you don't want to end up having to go every third day to have dialysis, well, again, controlling your blood sugar early is a way to make sure that that can happen.
Right, right. I mean, again, along the same line, one out of four people from Cincinnati has been estimated to have diabetes in 2025. And if they have one member in the family with diabetes, that goes up to 90%. So there is a huge problem. And again, the public health issue, I mean, this is a... If you have diabetes, you have 2 to 4 times chance of dying from heart disease than someone who doesn't. You have actually 2 times more chance of dying in period than someone who doesn't. So there is it creates a problem with premature death. So it's a very actually serious issue, and it has to be addressed as early as possible, because we're going to be, this is that the nature of diabetes is progressive.
Well, you talked about the genetic factor there. You said if you have a family member with diabetes, then you have a 90% chance of getting it. Is that what you just said?
So, no. What I said was actually the estimation based on the rise in the diabetes and how many people are going to be actually just involved and affected by this condition. But if you have a parent with type 2 diabetes, there's actually 40% chance that the kid gets it as well. If you have 2 parents with type 2 diabetes, the chance goes up to 60%. So there is a huge, actually, contribution from genetic components.
Let's talk. I know you say symptoms don't come on early, but let's talk about them in case people do need to know what they are. What are some of the things people should watch out for that may show that they have diabetes?
So we didn't talk about, actually, the diagnosis. How do you make the diagnosis? So diabetes is defined by fasting glucose level over 126 milligram per deciliter and a random glucose level over 200. But this is a continuum issue, right? So if your fasting glucose is 120, that doesn't mean that you're normal. So you have, we have actually a pre-diabetes stage, which actually your fasting glucose could be from 100 to 126, and you have a problem, and you are very much at higher risk for having diabetes. And the reason actually I started defining the glucose level is, even with pre-diabetes stage, people might actually have complications such as neuropathy. They may start having tingling on their legs, on their hands. They may actually the 10 or 20% newly diagnosed patient with diabetes, they come with a problem with eye disease. So you can actually have some of these complications, microvascular disease, even with much lower glucose levels. But in terms of the symptoms, how do you know it? As I mentioned before, you have to have very high glucose levels to have the symptoms. And the symptoms are generally because of frequency in urination. Because of frequency in urination, you are excreting actually glucose and nutrient. You may actually lose weight. Generally doesn't happen in type 2 patients, mostly in type 1 patients. And at the same time, you may feel thirsty all the time. You may actually have infection which doesn't go away. You may have chronic actually just struggle with infection one after another. So those are the symptoms that you have to look for.
The real crime of it all is that most people find out about their diabetes accidentally. Mm-hmm. As an example, more than 25% of the patients at University Hospital right now have glucose problems. 25% of the patients who are now, that's not the reason they're there,
right.
But we find out, right? They show up for all sorts of different reasons, but we find out that they have glucose problems. Not all of them, again,
right.
are actually diabetic, but all of them are at risk, right?
Right?
So, again, part of what we have done is try to make sure that we find those patients, get them some help, and get them to be tested.
This is Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. It's Diabetes Month, Diabetes Awareness Month, and we are talking about the disease this morning. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment.
Support comes from the Michigan Ross School of Business, offering its weekend MBA program every other weekend for 2 years. You can learn more at a coffee chat in Cincinnati on December 5th. For more information and to register, you can visit MichiganRossWeekend.com.
Support comes from Columbia Acura, offering a complete selection of new and pre-owned luxury cars. Columbia Acura's new vehicle lineup and professional staff are available 7 days a week on Montgomery Road at I-275. More information at 530-0100 or ColumbiaAcura.com. Columbia Acura, advance. Support comes from the Consumers Home Energy Expo. You can learn about cutting-edge products and services that can help save on home energy costs this winter. Informative demonstrations will be held to educate you on how to improve your home's efficiency Saturday and Sunday, the 17th and 18th. Duke Energy Convention Center, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., sponsored by the Home Builders Association of Greater Cincinnati.
This is Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking this morning about diabetes. My guest, endocrinologist and associate professor at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine, Department of Internal Medicine, Dr. Marzi Salehi. Also, American Diabetes Association Associate Director of Mission Delivery for Cincinnati, Aaron Crosby, and Director of the Cincinnati Diabetes and Obesity Center and Professor at UC College of Medicine, Department of Internal Medicine, Dr. Randy Seeley. If you have a question or a comment, please email them to impact@wvxu.org. or post them on our Facebook page. A couple of questions here. They're actually the same question, one from Jeremy and Valerie. And the basic question is, how much do you feel that diabetes now is the increase in diabetes is the result in the consumption of refined foods, high fructose corn syrup, high processed foods?
So this is an important question, right? What is driving the increase both in obesity and diabetes into our society? And there is no simple answer to this, right? I think there is no doubt that the changes in our food supply are contributors to both the obesity and type 2 diabetes epidemic. The exact nature of what the changes in the food supply are that are the most important contributors is very difficult to say. I think the simple version for people to go away with, right, is eating more vegetables, eating more fruits, reducing their processed food consumption, reducing their high-fat food consumption will all be contributors to a healthier weight and a better blood glucose control.
And lowering calorie intake as well, because they really need weight loss. And at the end of the day, this is about calorie to some degree.
So what do you advise people? You talk about the sort of pre-diabetes stage. You were talking about that earlier. Are there things people can do with exercise and diet then so they don't go on to develop diabetes?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there has been so many studies showing one after another. If you actually just change your lifestyle, meaning actually eating healthier to lose weight and do more physical activity, then you're going to be actually just reducing the risk of developing type 2 diabetes by 30 or 40%. This is actually really a huge improvement. And there are studies suggesting that if you use actually insulin sensitizer, such as a medication called metformin, in addition or alone, that can also halt the progression in some way. So that's why it's extremely important to screen these people early on, because they are very easy way to just kind of actually prevent that progression.
There's no doubt that losing weight matters a great deal in terms of both changing your risk for diabetes and the outcome once you have diabetes. Losing weight isn't easy, right? Mm-hmm. There's just no simple way to get people to lose weight. But they are in control of what they eat and how much they exercise. And whether that leads to weight loss or not, it turns out that's going to be better in terms of both your overall health and a number of parameters, but certainly about whether your risk for type 2 diabetes.
So even if you're not losing weight, but you get out and walk a couple days or 5-7 days a week or do some other kind of activity, you have a better chance.
Absolutely.
Yeah. For sure. Physical activity, regardless of weight loss, can actually improve your status.
And I think one of the misnomers here is that people have to engage in physical activity that's highly vigorous, right? That somehow you have to be training for a marathon or lifting heavy weights or something. Again, getting out and walking on a regular basis, straightforward, is way better than being sedentary. Gardening,
any of these. Using the stairs rather than elevator, right. Just short walk rather than driving, those are extremely important.
All of those things, again, when you get physical activity and burn calories, are going to help you in terms of your long-term health.
And I think so, too, just to plug that diabetes.org website once again. There's so many resources on there, not only for, encouraging physical exercise and talking about what you can do every day just to burn those calories, but also recipes to make some of your favorite foods a little bit more healthy, whether it's using, non-fat milk or different ingredients that can replace those high-fat items, but still taste good. Everybody likes a big meal, Thanksgiving's coming up, Thanksgiving meal, but you can make these things more healthy where they still taste good, but they're, reducing that risk factor again.
The diabetes.org website I highly recommend for people to go to, again, whether you have diabetes or not.
Right.
The other website you can go to for local information is diabetes.uc.edu. One of the things we've done is to go through carefully around all the websites that are on the web, and pick the ones that we think have information that's scientifically credible and useful. And we have links to all of those other web pages that you can flow through ours to see which ones we recommend as ones that are giving you serious information. One of the problems here is that there's lots of misinformation out there trying to sell you products of different types that tell you that they're going to be helpful when they're not.
I should say that we do have links to all of those sites on our website on the Impact Cincinnati page. That's WVXU.org. And you have an event coming up, Erin, you wanted to mention?
We do. On Saturday, this Saturday, November 10th, from 1 to 4, we have our Live Empowered program, which is an umbrella for our African American initiative, is sponsoring a huge screening and informative event at the Evanston Community Center. It's open to the public. There will be glucose screenings and blood pressure screenings, and ask the experts, so doctors and pharmacists that you can ask your questions to regarding, that your healthy lifestyle. But it's really about getting the information out there and letting the public know, that diabetes is there, especially within the African American community. Again, it's 1 to 4 at the Evanston Community Center, which is, on the intersection of Woodburn and Montgomery Roads, right on the bus line. There's going to be activities for kids, because that's a huge thing we haven't talked about either is, getting kids the information they need so that we can get their lifestyle changes to happen early so that we can help them grow up great and are able to, help them make healthy food choices and physical activity.
That's a very interesting question, because you talk about how the older you are, your risk factor goes up. But are you finding you're diagnosing it more in people who are younger?
Oh, absolutely. That's actually a huge rise from age. There is a period required from the time that you're obese up to the point that the pancreas is giving up in a way. So we generally don't see actually type 2 diabetes. Generally, we don't see it under age 10, for example. More in teenage, during the puberty, there's a huge rise in type 2 diabetes in teenage.
I think it's an important point, right? We're seeing onset earlier and earlier, which includes going down to teenagers. We used to always think, well, type 2 diabetes in particular happens in your 50s or your 60s, and that means your physician needs to manage the disease for 10, 15, 20 years. We're now in the position where a number of type 2 diabetics are getting that in their teens and 20s, and now we're talking about trying to manage that disease for periods of 40, 50, or 60 years. We don't have precedence for this. I think, you know, when we talk about it as a healthcare challenge, all of us want to contain healthcare costs, right? Without being able to contain the type 2 diabetes epidemic, we can't contain healthcare costs, right? It's a huge driver of increased costs. And if we don't do something about it, both here in our community, as well as across the country, it's going to be hard for us to be able to, we're going to spend even more and more of every dollar on healthcare costs. So it's a problem for all of us, even those who don't have diabetes.
Is there a cure?
I have to say, so okay, now we have to actually just go to the different direction. So I'm sure actually everyone is familiar with the weight loss surgery. So again, we talked about the root of the problem being actually weight gain and obesity. So the question would be, over the last few years, we have seen that there is a diabetes remission reported after gastric bypass surgery, for example, and that has been reported from 40 to 80%. It's too early to know how long this is going to last. We have good data to suggest that up to 10 or 15 years, we do have a very good, actually, diabetes remission. We don't call it cure because we really don't know how long it's going to last and what is happening really in terms of the preservation of the beta cells, which they are producing the insulin or not. But that is one of the options which has been seen as part of the diabetes treatment.
Got a couple of questions I want to get to before we run out of time. This from Randy, who says, I'm interested to know what the doctors think about the role, if any, of antidepressants in the development of metabolic syndrome and type 2 diabetes.
So there are actually reports and studies that they are actually linking depression to diabetes per se. And using antidepressive, actually some of the antidepressive medication, they have been shown to just reduce the insulin secretion. They have been shown that they are actually creating insulin resistance. So there are, and it has to be checked individually.
This, I'm just going to run through these. We have tons of questions. This is from Charlie. If diabetes is basically too much glucose in the bloodstream, then why not eat less foods that easily break down into glucose? Specifically foods with lots of sugar and starchy foods, which include pasta and some starch vegetables.
And that's not the case. I mean, the problem with diabetes is actually a problem with the insulin secretion and insulin action. It's not actually that you are not eating. So you need actually to eat nutrients to just keep up with your daily life. And then your body should actually be able to take up the sugar to function. And if the insulin is back to the whole actually just the concept, you should be able actually to have a normal physiology. So the problem is not the food intake.
This question from Bonnie, she says it's very specific. My father was diagnosed with, I hope I can say this, hemochromatosis 10 years ago. He also has diabetes, presumably from iron clogging up his organs, including his pancreas. Would I, as his daughter, be more likely to get diabetes because of his condition? I do go for regular blood donations and have my iron levels checked every year.
Yeah, that's actually all you need to do, just because this is not actually just a hereditary type of diabetes. The problem with his case is actually inflammation and the level of pancreas. So he lost the pancreas for that specific reason. And not necessarily you're going to have problem with the pancreas if you don't have hemochromatosis. Yeah.
Good. We are just about out of time. Any final words?
Just one thing. Again, we really, at UC, we spend a lot of time trying to study new ways to treat diabetes. And part of what Dr. Slay and I do is try to understand how bariatric surgery works to not just cause weight loss, but to improve diabetes. And we think that's going to lead to more therapies that are available. Understanding how that works will lead to therapies that aren't going to be as invasive as surgery, but that will be beneficial to a lot more patients.
Yeah, and I think it's important, again, with diabetes.org, if you have any questions about diabetes, pre-diabetes, what if you're having trouble, you know, with legal stuff, with school or with your job, please contact the American Diabetes Association. We're definitely here to help locally as well as nationally. Diabetes.org is a great way to get information, or give us a call at 1-800-DIABETES.
Thank you all for being here. And
thanks.
Thank you for listening to Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. My guests today were endocrinologist and associate professor at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine, Department of Internal Medicine, Dr. Marzi Salehi, American Diabetes Association Associate Director of Mission Delivery for Cincinnati, Aaron Crosby, and Director of the Cincinnati Diabetes and Obesity Center and Professor at UC College of Medicine, Department of Internal Medicine, Dr. Randy Seeley. Archives of our programs are available on our website, wvxu.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier.